after this very podcast host gave the number one carrier in the continental United States a severe ass-chewing. They surprised the entire community by rolling out the 4.4 update to all their Moto X devices in 1 week. Verizon Wireless, in coordination with Motorola, proudly presents You Got 4.4, but your Nexus is still broken. Ladies and gentlemen, it's me, Piper the DJ, one more time for episode 62 of Trending Mobile Technology, right here on TrendingTopicsNetwork.com. And that's right, folks, those words came out of my mouth. Verizon Wireless, in a shock to everybody all the way across the board, deployed the Moto X 4.4 update to all of their devices. Not quite sure why, not quite sure how they managed it. Some people are speculating that it might have something to do with the quote-unquote projects that are in the works that Google has going on with Verizon Wireless. Some people believe that it is something totally separate, totally coincidental, but this also does coincide with the HTC rollout that they're getting planned to go in the works. Not quite sure exactly what the total update system is, but evidently the entire Moto X line has been updated this past week, and the Droid line in its entirety is supposed to be updated this coming week. AT&T has also received that 4.4 update on their Moto X devices. Got a feeling this is the Motorola camp that's pushing pretty heartily, coming straight from Google, as they are supposed to be working in each other's back pockets a little bit more. You know, maybe things are getting a little bit, for lack of a better term, progressive in the Motorola camp. They were purchased. We're going on the second year now where Motorola was purchased by Google. So now maybe it's time for them to start showing that that purchase was something legitimate. Moving on straight into some other news. This coming off of Yahoo Groups. This is a little bit weird. Quote, the carriers reject the kill switch for stolen smartphones. Now, look back a little bit. Remember with me, when iOS released their iOS 7, this isn't when they released it, when they announced it, they were talking about a automated kill switch. And what this is, basically what it was, it's called the iCloud Find My Phone. Okay, this was when, if your device winds up getting stolen, you can go in and set your phone to lock down, to where the only person that can unlock that device is the person that has the iCloud, not only the username and password, but also the master unlock code. This is a code that's embedded within that device when you initially set it up, and it cannot be removed even if you do a wipe, a remote wipe, or a jailbreak. Much similar to the Android Device Manager. Now, the Android Device Manager, the way that works is you can lock that device down. There are ways to get around that lockdown, but there are also ways to remote wipe that device. Now, generally speaking, most carriers, you just can't take an iPhone to any old carrier and say, hey, activate this phone. There's certain hoops that you have to jump through, whether it be garbage on one carrier or something legitimate on another. Android devices are pretty popular. About the only place you can't take any Android device would be Verizon because of their douchebaggery, which we covered at great length from last week. But this is a story that comes in, and this actually affects the big five that are in the United States: Verizon, AT&T, U.S. Cellular, Sprint, and T-Mobile. The big five. Okay, U.S. Cellular, after they unloaded some of their spectrum to the Sprint Corporation, the central market, they've made a pretty dominant run. But here we go. The wireless industry says a kill switch isn't the answer because it'll allow a hacker to disable somebody's phone. End quote. This story initially started when Samsung came in. Yeah, we all know the big boys by the name of Samsung. They came in, they are the world's largest mobile phone provider. And they said, we're going to install an anti-theft measure into our devices, better known as a kill switch. And the mobile carrier said, oh, no, you're not. As a matter of fact, we're so adamant against this path and direction that any devices that we receive that have a kill switch built into it, meaning the iPhone or any of the Android devices where Android Device Manager is cooked into it, they say we're going to recook these ROMs and remove that technology from the devices. Now, here's a little statistic. 1 in 3 U.S. robberies involve phone theft. This is coming straight out of the FCC. Mostly smartphones, but, quote, most customers, it cost more than $30 billion last year. This is a survey done last June 2012. Now, Samsung goes on the record and officially says, quote, we reviewed the emails between us and Senior Vice President Samsung and a smartphone developer from the issue. One email in August said that Samsung had pre-installed kill switch software in some smartphones and was ready for shipment, but the carriers ordered its removal as a standard feature. Now, the carriers look at all this and they say, okay, there is a way that you can hijack this low-jacked phone already and make it to a situation where the phone could be compromised because of the government contracts that are established with some of these phones and various other things of that nature. But let's take this a step further back, okay, shall we? When you get a new device, whether it be a smartphone, whether it be a feature phone, it doesn't matter. Whenever you get a new device, your carrier, whoever is filling out that contract with you, asks you the following question. Would you like insurance with that device? It covers against lost, stolen. Some of them are even covering damage nowadays. And it usually costs between $3 and $5 a month. When I was a customer U.S. Sailor, you better believe I got it, because it worked in my interest. I mean, if I lost or had my phone stolen, all I had to do is pay the deductible and my device was replaced. Every particular type of phone had its own deductible. Like feature phones was like $50, smartphone was $100, and you know, the farther up you went in price, the farther up the deductible went. But here's where it gets a little sticky. John Panette, stand-up comedian, he does a routine talking about buying a new TV at an electronics store. And the salesman tells him, or asks him, he says, do you want the extended warranty? He's like, what do I need the extended warranty for? And he says, in case the TV breaks. And John says, well, if the TV is going to break, I don't want it. The salesman said, no, it's not going to break. It's the best TV. He's like, okay, well, let's go. And he's like, well, do you want the extended warranty? Well, why do I want the warranty? See what I'm saying? Okay, it's a rounded. Here's the thing. The bottom line is carriers, they get a kickback from the insurance that they sell. All right? That's how this works out. So if you have a hundred customers that come in and get new devices, and those 100 customers each get this insurance, all right? And the insurance company is saying, okay, this is what we're offering. You know, you pay X amount, and here's the kickback. So let's say that insurance is only $3 coming from the insurance provider. Well, obviously, the carrier is going to get their markup because they get their money off the top, right? So you get 100 customers come in, they're making $2 per customer on that, right? So if this goes in mind, that extra money goes bye-bye. It goes out the door, it's gone, okay? And that's just in a month. So you're talking $200 a month. Over the course of a year, you're looking at $2,400. All right? I mean, 2 times 12 is 24, right? And so this could put a dent in the carrier's pockets here. And this is something, you know, it's kill switch? I mean, some Samsung devices have this technology built into them already. Most Android devices, if you have the Android Device Manager installed, will work. If you have an iPhone, iCloud, Find My Phone service, that will work as well. If this is something that kind of makes your eyebrows go up, it makes mine go up because, A, you know, I've got to bring your own device, so I don't have to worry about carrier insurance in the first place. But I do believe in Android Device Manager. First build came out, you know, when it first came out, I was real hesitant. I was like, you know, let's wait till the second one comes out, see what happens. Second one came out, they got all the kinks worked out. Okay, Android Device Manager, it is installed on all my devices. It is functioning fine. It does what it's supposed to do. iCloud Find My Phone, I've heard it works really well. I don't know if it actually does or not, but I do know that it works really well. So this proverbial kill switch, lockdown, security, safety, whatever it is, the carriers are saying, well, you know, we got this garbage and this crap response, you know, whatever we want, because it could be security compromised, of which, yes, I can understand there's a little bit of compromise that could be built into that. However, the bottom line is if you're going to go take $2,000 out of somebody's mouth, they're going to say something about it, and they're not necessarily going to come clean as to why it's going to cause a problem. But the bottom line is there's probably some money that's, you know, they're going to be losing out on this, especially because of the insurance. I mean, it's like I said, you got 100 people at $200 a pop, you're looking at $2,400 over the course of a year. I don't care who you are. $2,400, that's a pretty good amount of money. So, you know, this is, the carriers need to get on board with this because it's in the interest of the customer. You know, I went on this great big old tirade last week about how the carriers weren't necessarily looking out for the customer, how one carrier in particular, you know, their customer service is designed to walk the customer around in circles until the customer gets tired and fed up with it. Well, you know, the carriers need to look at this and realize that this could help the customers recover their phones, okay? And it could. That's just the bottom line. Nobody wants to lose their device. I mean, I sure as heck don't. I don't want to have to worry about it, but, you know, it's one of those things that you get just in case because you never know. You know, so whether or not it's going to take money out of somebody else's pocket, it's, you know, this is just a sense thing. This is one of those things that the carriers need to look at and say, okay, what's in the best interest of the customer? And even though it would be coming in from Samsung and you're talking about the Samsung sauce, all right, thank you, Mr. Old School, once again. Even though we're talking about the Samsung sauce, you know, majority of your devices have this, whether it's a Samsung device or not, as, again, see Android Device Manager or iCloud Find My Phone. Android Device Manager will go on any Android device that is 4.1 and above, just so that you know, which is, I believe, it's about 60% of devices now. I don't have the official numbers yet for November because, obviously, we're still in November. But I'm pretty sure we're at 53% last time I looked for 4.0 and higher. Those numbers will be coming out. And Android Device Manager, it does work really well, just so that you're aware. I can go into Android Device Manager and I can geolocate any of my devices, whether as long as they have either Wi-Fi or GPS or both, I can locate them. Provide the fact they're giving out a signal of some sort, and I can go ahead and locate them. I can get pretty close to where they're at. And this is something that would only help, but unfortunately, without the carrier support, that's not something that could be very beneficial at this point. Now, from this point forward, there is, however, a way out there, and you guys can Google this information if you want, but there's a way out there to where you can take a device and turn it into an IP device, okay? Take your phone, switch it over to 100% data, totally get rid of the cell service, and it's done on some of these carriers that have the free wireless or the free LTE or whatever. And basically what you do is you go in and you disable the voice side of your device to make it totally LTE to where you go ahead and using like Skype or Google Talk or Google Hangouts or something like that. And it just makes things move along. And what it does is it relies 100% on data, whether it be over-the-air data or Wi-Fi data or whatever. It totally cuts out the cellular aspect of the device. Now, those of you that do heavy downloading, like me, that could present a little bit of a problem. But, I mean, the bottom line is the technology is out there. If there's something that you're not liking, you can find a way around. It just takes a little bit of looking, a little bit of Googling, and you might be able to get what you're looking for. Now, we move on to Qualcomm. They've been a little bit quiet for a little bit, but they have definitely made themselves a big move. Right now, the 4K TVs, they have a new chip that's come out, and it is designed to be able to operate the 4K TVs. It's a new Snapdragon line, citing, quote, "The mobile processor giant unveiled its fourth generation 4G LTE processor with significant improvements in performance and power consumption," end quote. This is designed to run 4K Ultra HD TV. Now pause. 4K TV. Now let's understand something here. Are these screens, even though they're only 5.5 inches long, are they going to be right in front of our face? Or, I mean, the only time you can tell that 4K is 4K is if you're like 2 feet away from it. So are we talking that type of closeness, or is this something that's not, you know, I mean, it's a new processor, and I'm all up for the innovations. And if you check out old school at the movies back in the archives, one of the sister shows usually up on Thursday morning, sometimes Thursday evening, breakdown box office and a whole bunch of other stuff like that. If you check out old school at the movies, they had a story come out at one point in time citing that all movies were going to be 4K movies, not only regular movies, but also mobile movies. But why do we need mobile movies in a hand device? That part doesn't totally understand me yet, but you know, we're just going to move forward and see what happens. Qualcomm has also gone on the books, citing that their Tox smartwatch has gone into later stages of development, looking to be released here very soon. There's a couple people that are saying that they've gotten them out on betas already. First impression of this Tox watch is it looks nice, but it's a little big. That's just my opinion. You know, I talked pretty highly about the Pebble watch last week. Talked pretty poorly about Samsung Galaxy Gear, which, by the way, they've shipped over 800,000 of those units already. Shipped, not sold. That's the operative words here. You can ship a device to a store, and that counts as a unit shipped. However, it can be sitting on a shelf someplace and not be counted sold. So interpret those numbers however you want to. 800,000 units Galaxy Gear have been shipped globally. So you've shipped 800,000 units. Big deal. I'm not impressed by that number, but that's just me. This Qualcomm Tox, it looks kind of neat. I mean, it's got a 200 megahertz Core M3 processor. It's a little bit higher than the Snapdragon chip. It's got pretty decent battery life. One question, though, is why is it so big? That's the question that I got. I mean, it just, I've seen the pictures of it, and it just, it doesn't, it's Tox, T-O-Q. If you want to check some other stuff, they're looking at a $300 price point on it, and it just looks a little bulky. I mean, yeah, honestly, it does. Status on the 4.4 rollouts. We got 4.4 KitKat is now starting to really receive the OTA updates. 238 megs is what it's going to be. I do not have a build number, but if you are a Nexus 4 user and you still haven't received that build, there is a URL that's out there that was released on 21 November. If you just go ahead and do a Google search for Android 4.4 KitKat OTA download link, you will be able to get a legitimate link that will take you to where you can download the ISO and safely sideload. Now, there is, just so that you know, my Nexus 7 did update to 4.4 the other day. I've been playing around with it a little bit. It did not come with the Google Experience Launcher, which disappointed me just a little bit for the simple fact that I was under the impression that the Google Experience launcher was supposed to come with 4.4. It didn't. So I just went ahead and did the same thing I did with my Note 2. I downloaded it, and I just sideloaded it onto the Nexus, and off I went. Now, a couple things to note as we continue on talking about this. Right away, right out of the gate, you know, this last week I'd only had it installed on my devices for a couple days before things got going on. One thing that I did that I have noticed already about the Google Experience Launcher is immediate improved battery life. Immediate. I mean, where my device pretty much runs all day. From when I take it off the charger to the time I put it back on, it's doing something, whether it be playing music, whether it be surfing the web, whether it be texting somebody else, it's always doing something. And right out of the gate, I noticed, usually after about 12 hours when I get home, I've got between 15 and 20% battery charge left over. After I installed the Google Experience Launcher and was running that, I was getting home between 20 and 25. Matter of fact, one night in particular, I got home, I had almost 30% left. Speculation right out of the gate on this is that the TouchWiz is totally deactivated now, and so therefore all the extra resources that TouchWiz was utilizing are no longer being utilized, so therefore the background resources that TouchWiz was consuming are freed up, and so therefore that battery and that processor doesn't need to be running, and therefore the battery life goes up as well. Last week I also referred to Google Hangouts getting an SMS update, added calling, voice calling, things like that. Google Voice still doesn't work seamlessly with that, but from the SMS screen, I tried this week, as a matter of fact. I went in and I just hit the make a phone call button, and it immediately went from SMS to phone call right there within Google Hangouts. And it uses the built-in phone software that's built-in native to your device. So that is something also that is available. Now, I'm going to kind of start a new section. Just for the simple fact that I did it last week and I actually kind of enjoyed it, and I'm going to go down and I'm going to start talking about a little some specs here. And here's the first one I'm going to talk about: the Asus Transformer Pad, herein marked TF701T. This is the newest device in the Transformer line. Here we go on the specs. You're looking at 10.1-inch 2560 by 1600 LCD with 300 PPI. It is a Nvidia Tegra quad-core 1.9 gigahertz processor with 2 gigs of RAM. Comes in 32 and 64 gig sizes. You have a SMP rear shooter and a 1.2 megapixel shooter in the front. Comes with micro SD headphone jack and micro HDMI. Wi-Fi is B, G, and N. The battery is a 7820 mAh. And if you get the dock, it also adds a 4170 mAh battery as well. Operating system at this point is Android 4.3, and the dimensions measure as such: 263 by 180.8 by 8.9 millimeters, weighs 1.3 pounds. Now, if you add the dock to that, it's 263 by 180.8 by 7 millimeters, with 1.25 pounds. Average retail at this point in time, topping out at $450 for the tablet and $150 for the dock. Now, overall, this does continue on with the Transformer line. You are looking at the solid construction. You're looking at the aluminum feel. It does have the SD slot. It does have the keyboard dock. This is there's still a little bit of speculation running back and forth between which came first, the Surface or the Transformer. This is, however, another high-resolution screen, and it's also very good when it comes to Asus. Okay, Asus manufactures good devices, and as a matter of fact, there are some devices that are currently reporting receiving a 4.4 update. Now, the downside is you've got 1.3 pounds for the tablet itself. You got 1.25 pounds for the keyboard. You put the two together and you're tipping the scales at over 2 pounds. Typically speaking, that would be a little bit on the heavy side as far as I'm concerned, but most situations, I don't think it would be too awful heavy. I mean, you're talking between 2 and 3 pounds, 2.55, so a little over 2.5 pounds here. Okay, is that something that's really that bad? Not really, but when you compound it with battery life dropping, that makes it a little on the sticky side, you know, and then you're looking at $450 for the tablet, which that in itself isn't that bad, but you add $150 for the dock to go as well, and you're looking at $600. Okay, I mean, if you're going to spend the money on $600, personally speaking, myself, I just go ahead and get an iPad Air and get a Bluetooth keyboard, go with it that way, and then call it a day. Overall, if you are a Transformer user, this is something that does stay in the Transformer camp. I mean, it does have the micro HDMI, and it would make a very good device. I mean, if you're one of those that's looking for the 10.1 form, I mean, it's got the 300 PPI as well, so it's going to have the HD out. All right? Once again, it is a little big. It is a little heavy. And you know, I mean, if you want to compare this Transformer pad to the Surface 2, that would be something that you'd have to do. Matter of fact, that's something I'm going to go ahead and put on the books for next week. I'm going to go ahead and get the specs for the Surface 2 and put it against the Transformer pad, and we will have kind of a bit of a showdown from there. Overall, though, I mean, if this is something that is interesting to you and you are a user of the Transformer family, this would definitely be overall a good deal. This is the next step in the Transformer in the Transformer life and the Transformer line. That's what I'm thinking of. It does have the Asus sauce. It's got a really good feel. You know, it's got the continued brushed aluminum feel. Battery life, however, you only get about 4 hours, maybe 5. So, you know, hopefully we can get a little bit of change on that with the 4.4, as 4.4 KitKat is, you know, supposed to be nice when it comes to battery resources. So maybe with the 4.4, when it comes down, the battery life will improve a little bit more. Additionally, as we do continue to move on, there is also the more comparison. They took the HTC One Max and they put it against the Samsung Galaxy Mega. All right, two big devices. Now, you know I'm on the Note 2. I've really gotten to where I like the bigger phones. I like the bigger screens and things like that. Am I going to go down in the size? Probably not. Phones are getting bigger, though. Tablets are getting smaller. And so the users out in Android headlines decided they're going to take these two beasts of a device, which is the HTC One Max and the Samsung Galaxy Mega. Now, the Galaxy Mega, it's a 6.3 solution, all right, just so that you're aware. And the HTC One Max, you are looking at the 5.9, okay? So you got a 5.9 screen on the HTC One Max. You got a 6.3 on the Samsung Galaxy Mega. And here are the respective specs. For the Samsung Galaxy Mega, 6.3-inch screen, 1280 by 720 with a 233 PPI. It contains a Snapdragon 400 dual-core 1.7 processor and 1.5 gigs of RAM. Comes in 8 and 16 gig sizes with the micro SD. You've got 8 megs in the rear and 1.9 megapixel in the front. Coming with 802.11 ABG and AC and Wi-Fi Direct and Bluetooth 4.0. It contains NFC, micro USB, an IR blaster, and a TV output for either MHL or AV Link. Current operating system is 4.2.2 with TouchWiz. Kind of pause a little bit. Samsung camp at this point has no announcement when it comes to 4.3. They are on a 4.3 rollout at this point in time because obviously they want to get Galaxy Gear into everybody's hands. People aren't buying the Note 3 like they had hoped, I have a feeling. Those numbers aren't officially in, but I don't think they're where they want it to be because the 4.3 update started rolling out of Samsung, quick, almost as if they weren't really doing anything with it. So therefore, Samsung had to get things together and get things moving around. So this has 4.2.2 on it. Is it going to get 4.3? I don't know. But once again, the thing to worry about, Samsung and their sauce. Okay, now granted the 4.3, that's going to hold the Galaxy Gear, but, it's still going to have TouchWiz on it. And see previous conversation concerning the Google Experience Launcher concerning battery and the effects TouchWiz has on it. Okay, for dimensions, you're looking at 167.8 by 88 by 8 millimeters and 199 grams. Battery is 3,200 mAh and currently available on AT&T, Sprint, and U.S. Cellular. Currently sold at $149 on 2-year contract subsidy and $595 unlocked. Now, HTC One Max, 5.9-inch screen, 1920 by 1080, super LCD 3 screen with 373 PPI. Looking at a Snapdragon 600 quad-core 1.7 with 2 gigs of RAM in 16 and 32 gig sizes, also with an SD card. You're looking at 4-megapixel ultra in the rear and 2.1-megapixel in the front. Wi-Fi is 802.11 A, B, G, N, and AC with Wi-Fi Direct and Bluetooth 4. You also have NFC and micro USB and mini HDMI out and a DLNA port, which is another direct out. Now, the HTC One Max is shipping with Android 4.3. It also has Sense 5.5. And at this point, HTC is winning the foot race when it comes to deploying the new Android builds, just so that you're all aware. The dimensions are 164.5 by 82.5 by 10.3 millimeters and 217 grams. So it's got to beat a little bit on the weight. The battery life is 3,300 mAh. Currently available on Verizon, Sprint, and maybe AT&T. No confirmation yet. Currently being sold for Verizon on 2-year contract for $300 and Sprint $249, respectively. Now, bear in mind, I've been to Best Buy a couple different times. I've actually been able to hold the Samsung Galaxy Mega. I have not held the HTC One Max, okay? So I've got a little bit of product bias here, just for the simple fact that I do like the Samsung Galaxy series, okay? I mean, I've got Galaxy Note 2 that I carry around as my daily driver. I like the big phone. I like the Galaxy Mega. However, the downside to that, bigger device, if there's one thing that I have to hold against Samsung, it's their speaker placement. Why in the heck? Who in the right mind? If I'm looking at the screen, why would you put the speaker on the back? You know, and I've heard the philosophy, the belief that, well, you know, if you hold it in landscape, you got your hands going across the back, the sound's going to bounce off your hand and go the other way. I've been around, I've seen the little, the little speakers that you can plug in the back of your phone or the little docks that you can, set your phone in like the little chair and it's got a speaker that comes around to where, but I mean, really? Look at the HTC One Max, okay? It's got the stereo speakers. You turn it sideways into landscape mode, and you got two speakers staring you right there in the face. Blammo! Okay? I've read the reports on the demos concerning these speakers. It's good speakers. It's good big bottom. Now, granted, are the speakers that important to me? No, they're not. because I do a majority of my listening through headphones. Now, granted, I need speakers for like phone calls and stuff like that, but overall speaking, speakers aren't that important to me. But here is what is important, okay? Listen to this. The HTC One Max has a 5.9-inch 1920 by 1080 Super LCD 3 with 373 PPI. The Samsung Galaxy Mega 6.3 has a 6.3-inch 1280 by 720 LCD with 233 PPI. Processors are the same, RAM, about a half a meg more in the HTC One Max. And this is why the HTC wins in my book. Better resolution screen, more RAM, better storage. Okay? Where the Samsung Galaxy Mega 3 only comes in 8 and 16, HTC One Max comes in 16 and 32. I could care less about the extra ports. I'm not concerned about an IR blaster. I'm not concerned about all the extra ports. As long as it's got a micro USB so I can charge it. If there's another thing around there that I'm concerned about, which in my case would be MHL export because I use it all the darn time, you know, then I will. But however, in this particular case, we're talking spec for spec. We're not talking extra stuff. I'd have to go HTC One Max. I mean, it's a beast, you know, and then you can go in there, you can configure Wi-Fi direct to where you can stream music and go that way. But, you know, you put HTC One Max versus a Samsung Galaxy Mega 6.3, even though the 6.3 does have a bigger screen by 0.4 inch, you know, the HTC One Max still has a better device. Now, I got another watch I'm going to look at here that we're going to talk about. This is called the Neptune Pine. Neptune Pine. Now, think with me a little bit. Those of you who are Resident Evil fans or Doom fans or any of those things where you've got the futuristic military guys running around, you've always got the one guy, the computer specialist, the geekhead, the tech guy, the one who's not really hard on the trigger, but he's got all the gadgets to get anywhere you need to go, and he can hack just about anything and get it all done, da-da-da-da-da. He's the guy that has the computer on his wrist, all right? The address that we're looking at is NeptunePine.com. That's NeptunePine.com. This is a project that's currently in Kickstarter. I watched the video for this. When I initially saw this, I looked at it and I kind of raised my eyebrows. I initially thought, I don't think so. I'm not quite sure that this is going to work. But as I watched the Kickstarter program, my eyebrows kind of went down. My opinion started to change a little bit. Here's why. We have a full-feature phone on your wrist. That's right. Their product line says, quote, Neptune Pine isn't a smart watch. It's a smartphone on your wrist. You can go ahead and you can watch the Kickstarter video. Now, don't get me wrong. The phone looks big. It is definitely a geek phone. Those of you kids from way back when you had the databank watches, yeah, this is a little bit worse than that. Here's the size. 66 by 53.5 by 14.2 millimeters. The handset itself is 2.14 ounces. The wrist strap, which detaches, is 1.24 ounces. They do go together. You can go ahead and pull the screen off so you can do various other things. The display is a 2.4-inch TFT capacitive touchscreen with 320 by 240Q VGA resolution. This is one of those things where if you were in the palm or handspring era, this will bring that back into your recollection. It will work on GSM, GPRS, or edge speed at 850, 900, 1700, or 1900. And it'll also run CDMA 850, 1700, 1900, and 2100, which gives me the belief that it's going to be functional on all Big Four devices. This does have a Qualcomm Snapdragon S4 1.2 dual-core ARM Cortex-A5 processor with 512 megs of RAM, coming in 16 or 32 gig sizes, and only operating on Android 4.1 Jelly Bean. Now, at this point in time, not quite sure if there's a 4.2 or 4.3 or even a 4.4 update on this. As far as Wi-Fi, though, you're only looking at B, G, and N with a GPS controller on it. Comes with Bluetooth 4.0 and a USB 2 chip, as well as operation on a micro SIM, but no SD. Sound, you've got speaker, you got a microphone, you got a 3.5mm headphone jack, and a vibrating alert. Pause. Do you want your wrist vibrating? I mean, in some situations, I can understand how that could be a good thing, but overall speaking, if I'm trying to do a presentation or record a podcast or do a demo or something of that nature, I don't want my wrist vibrating. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, I understand it'd be the same thing of having my hip vibrate because of a cell phone, but it's a lot easier for me to ignore my phone on my hip because I can pop it off my belt, throw it in my bag before I even start. If I go putting this thing on my wrist, as big as it is, I mean, now granted, I don't honestly believe that I would forget about it, but in the event that I do, and I wind up starting a presentation with this on my wrist, it could be like, wow, okay, you know, and then you can just get size, guys. Size. It's looking a little big, looking a little bulky. The concept is cool, but fresh out of the gate, it's a little bit too much for me. Camera, you got a 5-megapixel shooter in the rear, VGA front-facing camera with LED flash on both ends. It's got an accelerometer, gyroscope, and a compass built into it. Now, here's where I start running into my problem with this device. The battery. Yes, the battery. The battery is only an 810 mAh lithium polymer battery. Time out. My Note 2, in all of its glory, has a 3100 mAh battery, and that gets me 14 hours on a regular basis. You can charge this phone, the Pine, via USB to computer or power adapter. Talk time, you're looking at 8 hours on 2G, 6 hours on 3G, no mention of LTE. You can use it for up to 7 hours on Wi-Fi. You can play back music for up to 10 hours. You can do 5 hours of video playback and only stand by for 120 hours. Do the math. You can stand by for a while, but that's the way it typically operates on a majority of your devices. Musical playback, though, is only 10 hours. Video playback is 5 hours. That's not going to cut it for me. Sorry, I hate to say it, and I've been saying it a lot, and I thought I was going to make it today without saying it, because while I was drafting these notes, I said to myself, don't do it. But I'm going to. The battery. If it can't cut 12 hours, I don't have any use for it. I'm sorry, but that is the bottom line. This one, it's telling you right here, musical playback, you're only going to get 12 hours or 10 hours. It's not going to be enough for me. My device has to be able to get off the charger at 5 o'clock in the morning and go until I get home, which is a lot of times more than 12 hours. This one, at fresh out of the gate, just looking at these specs, is a no dice for me. It's a great concept. It's a great concept, but it's a no dice for me. If you watch their Kickstarter video, take a look at it. It's an interesting thing. For the simple fact that what they're trying to do is, and they blatantly said in their Kickstarter video, this is designed to be a standalone where most watches are Bluetooth sync with your device. This is all in its own. This is designed to operate on its own, and this is designed to be its own creature. So, you know, good, bad, ugly, I'm not quite sure. But overall speaking, like I said, the concept is good. Don't get me wrong. The concept is good. However, the execution on this particular case isn't going to be good. I mean, it's too big. Now, it's designed for the geek. It's definitely got that geek factor and things of that nature. But overall speaking, you know, this is going to be one of those things where the first run isn't going to be the top of the line for me. Now, Here's something else, and I got two Kickstarter stories right here at this point. Phone Blocks, remember you talking about that a couple weeks ago? Yeah, I've done a little bit more looking because they've popped up in the news again. They are concreting their relationship with Motorola, and here's the thing. I actually took the time to look at all of their promo videos. I took the time to investigate their device a little bit more. And this actually looks a little bit sharper than I anticipated. I mean, it looked good to me already. But, I mean, their promo video, their Kickstarter video, is actually pretty good. So check it out, phoneblocks.com. PhoneBlocks.com. Definitely something worth reading about, worth looking into if it's something that interests you. It is something coming out of the Motorola camp. They are working on, they're working together to keep this, but at the same time, you know, they're, from what they explain, is they're only using Motorola as a consultation source. This isn't the type of thing where Motorola is floating these guys. These guys are still their own people, but Motorola is helping them with development. Now, this, I initially thought this was going to be a little bulky. It's a good idea, but it's a little bulky. What you do is you get a frame, okay, kind of like a breadboard. And then there's these little modules that I thought they were going to snap in. No, they just kind of slide in there, you know, one side or the other or something like that. And then there's a couple screws on the bottom that you screw it in, put it together. The fundamental size and physics operates the same as one of those 3D puzzles, okay, where the pieces lock together, you know, and you can pick it up and move it around and do stuff like that and it still works, okay. But overall speaking, fundamentally speaking, this device looks like it would be, I mean, it would be the epitome of customize. If you want a particular size screen, boom. If you want a different size camera, boom. If GPS or one other thing, I mean, the example that they used, they said, you know, if you're one that isn't big on this type of feature, something, you know, like GPS or Bluetooth or camera or something like that, you can pop them out and replace it with the bigger battery. And I'm like, wow, I mean, really? You know, I mean, if you're, I don't use my camera all the time, okay? And if you go back in time to the HTC, not HTC, to the handspring days, okay, just get on eBay and Google handspring prism or springboard modules, all right? I got my start in the PDA realm in the handspring world. I used handspring. I had a guy talk to me about it, and I actually thought that it was better than Palm at the time. And honestly, if I could do it again, I'd do it again because the springboard blocks, in my opinion, were the best thing about it. And here's why. If you had a PDA, that was good for two, maybe three things. You had 8 megs of storage power on that device. Now, the handspring, you had the springboard device, which you could get different modules to plug in to give it different capabilities. Like, for example, in those days, you could get like an MP3 player, you get a GPS, you get a modem, you get a phone module. You could get a storage drive, you get a dictionary module, you could get a nursing or doctor module, you get a finance module. I mean, just little things you could pop out and pop in. It's just little RAM chips, or actually RAM modules, because they weren't chips, they're actually big. They looked, a little bit smaller than the size of Post-it notes. Okay? You know, just pop it out, pop one out, pop the other one in, and off you go. And then, you know, the drivers were installed on the module, the information was installed on the module. Most of them were read-only, but there were a couple of times where you could, like, take a chip, whether it be SD or perhaps a mini SIM or something of that nature, plug it in there, and then you could expand the memory that way. You know, so handspring really gave me a perspective on how to modularize your device. Because I remember the first module I bought was the MP3 player. Okay, well, that updated. The first module, that module, you can get 32 megs of data. 32 megs of MP3 data, which at that time was about 30 songs, I think. All right? Depending on how you compressed or how it was ripped or things like that. Then the next module that came out that was an MP3 player, it had two full-size SD chip slots that you could put into it. Now, here's the beauty of this. You could hook that module up to your handspring with chips in it, hook that up to your computer, and then use it as a standalone SD drive or an external hard drive, provided the fact you didn't overfill everything. But, I mean, you can use it as a drag-and-drop source for storage. It worked on it on Mac, and it worked on PC. You know, so that was just, that was another way, you know, modularizing. Something else was the GPS module. You know, I mean, the only time I use the GPS module on my handspring is if I was traveling. That's completely honest. The other time, it sat on top of my dresser or in a box. But I had a little bag that all my little springboard modules went into, and off I went. You know, so it's not saying that it was bad, okay? But if I didn't need a particular feature for my handspring at that time, I didn't have to take it. And that is what this phone blocks concept is capitalizing on, okay? If you are not big on pictures, pop out the chip, put it in a bag, and use that space for something else. In the example that they use, battery. So where I don't use the camera on a regular basis, I can pop that chip out, I can put it in a Ziploc static proof baggie, throw that in my bag just in case I need it. Alright? And then put in like a bigger, you know, like an SD or like a bigger SIM or like a bigger battery, or I mean, there's plenty of different things you can do with that space. And it looks like they're going in the right direction with this. Okay? It looks like it's a good thing. I like what it's looking like. It looks sharp. It looks like it's been thought out. I mean, they have a Q&A section on their website. You know, their initial idea, quote, "A phone only lasts a couple years before it breaks or becomes obsolete. Although it's often just one part that's killed, we throw everything away because it's almost impossible to repair or upgrade." Now, if you go back to the top and you click on the questions link, you can actually look at the backside of this device out of what the labels or the modules are actually labeled. You know, you've got Wi-Fi, you got camera, looks like you got your antenna, clock, thermometer, Bluetooth, extra battery, 1, 2, looks like they've got 3 battery modules, they've got a clock module, they've got a tilt and extra power and flash and things of that nature. And then on the table, they've got more modules. So you can ultimately customize your device with this. Coming in, who made it? Well, this firstly came out from Dave Hackins, from the first ideas of prototype to website to video to logo. Matt helped him with recordings, technical, and various other things. So what's with the future plan? And this, once again, coming straight off the website, quote, "Developed this phone with Motorola and your help. Phone blocks will be the connection between both. We are building an online platform where people can share ideas, thoughts, join discussions, and give feedback." Now, time out. This could work in one of two ways. A, this could work out really good, and it could be something that'll catch on like wildfire. My fear concerning this is they will not make the parts universal enough for everybody out there. For example, I like the big screens. I do. I mean, do I want to go, even though I'm really keen on this project, say it's only got a 4.5-inch screen on it, am I willing to sacrifice my Note 2 for that? Unfortunately, no. You know, but I mean, if they make this to where you can put a bigger screen, you know, slide out one screen, put in another screen or whatever, you know, or make it to where the screens upgrade every year or change with the times or something of that nature, that could definitely turn my head. And that could definitely be something that's interesting. So, you know, it's a good thing, bad thing. I mean, bad thing, good thing. It has its pros, it has its cons. This is something that has definitely got my eye. It's got my attention. If it's something that sounds like your attention, do a Google for it. Or actually, just go to their website, phoneblocks.com. That's phoneblocks.com. And they will, you know, just take a look around. There's also a Q&A, contact us, and all that kind of good stuff. And then move on from there, see what happens. You know, so it's definitely something that could work in the favor of the user, all right? And this is definitely something that would work in favor of, you know, I mean, just overall, it'd be planet-friendly. It's a great idea. I'm liking it. It's going straight along with the Handspring series and what they're working on. I still wish Handspring were around, but, you know, you'd only do one module at a time with Handspring. This, you can do pretty much the entire device is modular. So, you know, this is definitely something that's on my radar. I'm not quite sure what I can do yet, but it's definitely something that the more on it that I can do, the happier I will be. And here's the last story that I'm going to get into. This one coming in off the AP, dated 22 November. Quote, Exchange email badly broken for many Android 4.4 users. No single cause yet determined. That's a headline, and I'm going to go in straight here and quote it off the entire thing. In the haze of excitement over getting the latest and greatest from Android, sometimes we forget that some people actually depend on their phones and tablets for work. Within the professional world, mobile access to email tends to be vital. For better or for worse, an overwhelming number of businesses and organizations rely on servers running Microsoft Exchange or some other software implement of the protocol to handle their email and calendar needs. Unfortunately, Minefield, the Bugs, and KitKats Exchange support are leaving many stranded without access to their employer's server. Now, understand, I was the guy that was always going to IT saying, hey, look, I've got an Android device, let me get on the Exchange. And they always said no. Mr. Old School, who is the resident tech guy, he talks about configuring stuff like this. So here's the symptoms, all right? Quoting again, unlikely a typical bug watch, documenting a single bug is nearly impossible. Too many similar symptoms have been reported, and many are obviously related, but they're all related enough to indicate multiple issues are at play. Our list of issues starts off with several people simply, quote, unable to get a connection to their Exchange account, end quote. Despite having no connection with versions of Android prior to KitKat, usually these people present an unusual error, reading, can't connect to server, etc. No particular theme exists, but it does turn out that some people could resolve it by using domain name syntax instead of going through the email address. Okay, so here's the possible contributing factor. Some users have noticed some problems occur due to, quote, corporate policies enforcing SD card encryption. So if your card's not encrypted, I mean, it's just one of those certificate things. What is the workaround? Unfortunately, at this time, there is no simple push-pull, but Google has been advised, and they are working on a movement. Based on this article, though, IMAP is still valid and functional. So, you know, I mean, most people, if they go ahead and they get, you know, various changes and upgrades and swaps around and other things of that nature, you know, if they go ahead and they get the Exchange to go, they don't always need to have contacts updated, and they don't always need to have all the other stuff going, but, you know, it helps. But 90% of the time, once you get your contact sync, you know, IMAP will work well enough. Additionally speaking, as I said, the workaround currently at this point until something else comes in is the IMAP. That's the only recommendation at this point. Coming down, the issue does seem to be coming in. A lot of Exchange problems, okay? This popped up about 45 minutes after the AOSP went out, and the currently coming out of the Android camp is they're working on this to resolve in a future release. Now, this isn't something that's happening on every exchange, just some, okay? So if you're updating to the 4.4, go and log on to your exchange, see if it works. If it does, okay, you've missed the bullet. If it doesn't, well, you got a little bit of work to do. So, you know, be patient. You can utilize IMAP. Just make sure that you're backing up your contacts and that your contacts don't wipe out and all that other kind of good stuff in your calendar and things of that nature. Just be patient. New software always has bugs. For any questions, check out Xbox One and PlayStation 4. They had their respective bugs on their release dates. And for even more information, check me out next week as I host PK Punk and Obi-Wan Jabroni, two gamers from the UK. And we will be down here breaking down not only the new game systems, but also the mobile tech and how it is all associated. Well, folks, you've done it. It's been another hour. Well, almost an hour by the time it's all edited down and everything like that. It's also always been a great ride, folks. You know, look me up on Google+. You can find me there, Piper's Tech Talk. I'm doing a majority of my stuff on Google+ now. You know, you can find me, Piper's Tech Talk. You can also find me on plus.google.com/PiperDJ. You can get a hold of me if you have questions or other things of that nature, contributions, PiperTheDJ@gmail.com. And, also, while you're out here, I mean, you found me on TrendingTopicsNetwork.com, ladies and gentlemen. Make sure you're checking out the other great shows that we got here. If you like MMA, you know, stuff in the Octagon, Masters in the Business of Beatdown, check out T-Mac and Ozone. They're on Fight Show Live. They're on every Sunday night. You know, they're also on a local radio station down in Missouri. You can also check out Captain Awesome and T-Mac as they break down TNA and MMA. They usually have their sent out about Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. It's called the Spanish Announce Table. It's the newest weapon in professional wrestling. Thursday mornings, make sure you're checking out Mr. Old School as he brings Old School in the movies with he and his panel of critics. I tell you what, I enjoy listening to those guys because, you know, they do pretty good. They do all right, and they always willing to bring their opinions, and it's always a lot of fun. And, of course, make sure that you're checking out MJR and The Real News. He and I were on earlier this week breaking down some of the new politics. That show hasn't hit yet, but, you know, we'll see what we can get done and maybe see about getting things back on a regular basis. And just move forward from there. You know, ladies and gentlemen, also, while you're at it, make sure you take a roll on over to blogtalkradio.com. Check out the boys on the Eat My Gold Network. Now, they're talking about soccer, but, you know, we all know it is football. And, you know, it's just... Now, I'm not fully sure how the soccer season works around the world. I've never left the continental United States. But, you know, it's... Make sure you check the guys out. I mean, you got Smoking Sky, you got Guru, you got Only One Mart. You know, they get together and they talk soccer. You know, GBL, he's out there too. And having a lot of fun. You know, got a lot of people out here on these little podcasts doing a lot of different things, just doing what they enjoy doing and having fun while they're doing it. So please do me a favor, show us all a little bit of love, check us all out right here. I will be back, as I said, next week. I got PK Punk and Obi-Wan Jabroni, provided the fact that that everything works out the way that it's supposed to. Hey, we are getting ready to hit American Thanksgiving, at least. You know, I know the Canadians had Thanksgiving a few months ago, I think. I don't know. But either way, American Thanksgiving is coming up this Thursday, so make sure you have some turkey, have some fun, rest, relax, and watch some football. From all of us to all of you right here on Trending Mobile Technology, I'm Piper the DJ, taking a bite out of the mobile space. Good night.